This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This coming Friday, many people will pause to celebrate Independence Day. And for many in the Bay State, that means a trip to the shores of Cape Cod. So we're going to begin today by talking about a major engineering feat that transformed a big part of Massachusetts, the Cape Cod Canal, which turns 100 years old this month.
Millions of people have driven over it countless times, and if they think about it at all, they associate it with traffic jams or maybe a fleeting view of a wide blue waterway. But the canal represents a major engineering accomplishment. The Pilgrims dreamed of it, and after a British naval blockade trapped his army, George Washington demanded it.
And without it, generations of seafarers sailing up the Atlantic coast had to make an often perilous journey around the Cape. It's one of the widest sea level canals in the world, and since the Cape Cod Canal was completed 100 years ago, it has transformed the economy of the Cape and made transportation and trade faster and safer.
Doug Most, the Boston Globe's deputy managing editor for New Initiatives, wrote recently about the Cape Cod Canal at 100 and joins us now. And Doug, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thanks for having me.
This seems like a nice summer subject to talk about. So let's go back to when this idea was originally born. The idea of building a canal connecting Buzzards Bay with Cape Cod Bay was first suggested by the Pilgrims as far back as 1623. Why did they want to build it? What did they recognize?
Well, there are a lot of reasons. I mean, I think that, you know, the funny thing is I started to research this a little bit myself. One of the first things I did was I looked at a map. And it's sort of striking, you know, I think we forget sometimes the shape of our coast. But when you look at a map, you're sort of reminded of the fact that if you're a ship, for example, and you're trying to get from New York Harbor, let's say, to Boston, the only way you can do it is if you go around the tip of the Cape. I think sometimes we forget our geography that we learned in history class.
And that's pretty far out there in the Atlantic, right?
It's a big detour, if you want to think of it that way. You can't just go straight up the coast. You have to go way around this tip. And that proved to be not only enormously time-consuming for ships that were carrying produce and goods and other sort of products that people relied on to live, whether it's coal or other things. It was also dangerous. The waters out by the tip of the Cape were treacherous, swallowed up ships by the hundreds in bad weather. So those were some of the big reasons why for many, many years, centuries, as you pointed out, people felt like we need to figure out a way to shorten that trip.
Right.
We need to get through one of these bays to the other bay without going around that tip.
Now, I'm intrigued by this detail of American history, too, that we mentioned in the introduction that I learned from your piece, that George Washington demanded this and that his army was actually trapped by a British naval blockade. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I mean, George Washington sort of, you know, he recognized that there was another reason why a canal would be valuable, which is that ships, if we're doing battle off the coast of the U.S. in the Atlantic there, if they wanted to back up and retreat, let's say, having a hiding place, if you want to think of it that way, to retreat to, a place to sort of duck into and maybe rearm themselves and sort of collect themselves and then head back out. Having a canal and a place to sort of duck into would be a valuable thing to do. So that you weren't completely exposed all the time.
Sure.
So he sort of pushed for that, but it would take centuries before it would actually happen.
Now, why? Why did it take so long for them to accomplish this feat?
Well, I think as the builders and the engineers who finally did it discovered, it's a big deal.
Mm.
digging a canal is a really big deal. In fact, the two men who finally came together to do it, William Parsons and August Belmont, who I know we'll talk about, they had teamed up a decade earlier in the early 1900s to build the New York subway. And you would think, well, that's a big deal. Building a New York subway is a big deal. Turns out that digging a canal off Cape Cod was even harder than digging the New York subway.
So tell us more about August Belmont and his partner, William Parsons. Why did they succeed where others failed or couldn't even get started?
I'd say a couple reasons. First of all, August Belmont had the money. Mm-hmm. He was a very, very rich man who'd been left a fortune by his father, who was also a big banker. August Belmont was sort of a spoiled son who, when he struggled in Harvard and in grade school, his father bought him a ship, and his father gave him a stock in a bank to bribe him to get better grades. he was a spoiled kid who, when he finally became a man, got into the banking business like his father and made a fortune. And was able to sort of get involved first in the digging of the New York And that was where he sort of made his legacy, if you want to think of it that way.
The New York subway system. We lost you for a half a second there. But where he made his legacy, digging the New York subway, right?
He made his legacy financing the New York City subway, correct. Mm-hmm. That was a project that went from 1900 to 1904, the first stretch of the New York City subway. And he was the banker who sort of financed that project. And he teamed up with William Parsons, who was the chief engineer on that project. And then when the subway opened, both men sort of moved on to other things, and in particular, Parsons went looking for his next challenge. He's one of the great engineers of our time, and he went looking for another challenge, and he stumbled onto it in the Cape Cod Canal.
Yeah.
Saw that as his next hurdle.
And what were some of the challenges of digging this canal?
Well, there were a couple that I think they knew were going to be difficult, but I don't think they knew just how difficult, especially Parsons. Parsons was a brilliant engineer. I write a lot about him in my book about the subways, The Race Underground, where I talk about how his mind sort of was almost like a photographic memory. He sort of could look at something and then realize the details and see just how what the problems he was going to encounter were. And so in the canal, he sort of recognized that one of the biggest challenges he was going to have to deal with were boulders. He knew there were big rocks underneath the water there in the channels, and he was going to have to deal with them. What he didn't know is, first of all, how many of those boulders there were and how big they were. Hmm. Some of them were up to 100 tons, and there were more than 700 of these giant boulders. Moving them was a huge, huge challenge. Initially, they tried just to lift them out with cranes and other things. And when that didn't work, divers had to go in with dynamite and blow them up, essentially, to try to remove them.
Wow. Well, so when they got the canal built, you wrote in the Boston Globe magazine that a steamboat leaving New York at 5 p.m. could make it to Boston by 8 a.m. the next day. So basically, right. It was an overnight trip. How
Correct.
Long did it used to take to do that more perilous trip around the Cape?
It could take up to a week, but usually 3 or 4 days.
Wow.
But again, it depended on sort of the weather and the conditions and whether they had to stop somewhere along the way. So there were a lot of factors that would play into it. But it definitely would take at least twice as long and sometimes longer than that.
Now, of course, so it made shipping safer, faster. It also transformed the Cape itself in a big way, right?
It did. I mean, you know, I, like a lot of your listeners, I grew up sort of going to the Cape. I've been going to the Cape since I was a little boy, and I have these great memories of driving over the Sagamore Bridge with my parents and sort of looking down at the canal and never giving it a second thought. Just sort of, to me, it was like a river. You know, you didn't understand what it was, and you certainly didn't think about it as being a man-made thing. But it really is, and I think that one of the biggest things it did was it opened up the Cape to being not just a place where the super rich had these estates, but it allowed the ordinary folks to sort of come out and vacation. Because before the canal, before these terrific bridges were there, it was a place where you could only get to if you had a private coach, if you had, could take the train out there. And that was really only available to the people who had a lot of money.
So today, the Cape Cod Canal, what is it used for by and large?
The Cape Cod Canal
yeah.
is used largely by big ships for moving commerce, moving produce up and down the canal. You know, it's a way for people to, for shippers to, again, to move quicker,
yep.
to get from the bottom half of Massachusetts and the bay to get all the way out to the tip of Provincetown and to bring a lot of things out that way. I mean, that was sort of the eventual destination was Provincetown, which, of course, is one of the financial hubs of the Cape as we think of it.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Over the years, I've driven over those bridges, I don't know, probably a million times, if not a million times, certainly more times than I could possibly count. And I've never actually gone through the canal in a boat. I'm wondering if you've done that and what's that like?
I have not gone through it on a boat. I've been alongside of it. I've biked along a path on the side of the canal, which is a beautiful thing. And there's some great paths along there. And in fact, we have some beautiful pictures that ran with the story that I wrote in the Globe magazine that sort of show the beautiful photos of the side of the canal. I've never been on a boat, though, on it, like you. I think it's one of those things that we probably take it for granted. We sort of just, you know, we go over it, but we don't appreciate the magnitude of that project.
Might have to put that on the bucket list then. Get
yeah,
through the Cape
yeah,
Cod Canal
true.
On a boat. How does it compare to other canals? I think you said it's one of the largest sea level, one of the widest sea level canals ever built ever anywhere?
Yeah, it is one of the largest ever. It's sort of it's on a scale. It's very similar to the Panama Canal, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So the Panama Canal, which ironically or coincidentally was also designed and built by William Parsons, one of his other great contributions to our world. Parsons was a great engineer. The New York Subway, the Cape Cod Canal, the Panama Canal. Talk about three big contributions So it was a huge, huge achievement. It's about 8 miles long, the Cape Cod Canal. It was widened and deepened after the initial digging of it when it opened in 1914. They sort of acknowledged that it was probably going to have to get a little deeper and get a little wider, and it did under the auspices of the government, actually.
So 100 years old this month. Tell us about the 100th anniversary celebration. What's going on down there that we should know about?
Yeah, there's a lot of activities going on. There's a website that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineer has set up called Cape Centennial. And there's just a lot of festivities going on all through the summer. They've got a lot of activities planned for, especially in the Bourne area, which is sort of where the canal begins, if you want to think of it that way. There's a lot of things along the water, along the shores, and there'll be some activities on the water itself. But the website, the Canal Centennial, I believe, has sort of a whole list of all the activities going on. So they're really pulling out all the stops to sort of celebrate one of these great achievements that I think a lot of us take for granted today.
All right. That's Doug Most. He's the Boston Globe's deputy managing editor for New Initiatives. He's the author of The Race Underground, Boston, New York, and the Incredible Rivalry That Built America's First Subway. And you can find a link to his Boston Globe magazine piece, Cape Cod Canal's 100th Anniversary Then and Now, at RadioBoston.org. Doug, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. One other thing I want to mention, by the way, with my story, there was an amazing photo by David Ryan, an aerial shot, which people should look at. That will give them a great appreciation for the canal.
All right. Again, you can find a link to that at RadioBoston.org. Thanks, Doug.